Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask, and this is the American Independence. Oops, no, it's not. This is Financial Survival. I do the American Independence Hour on Tuesday nights, and that's a different program. Our guest tonight is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. James has been living in Japan since 2004. He started the Corbett Report in 2007. As an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. He's an editorial writer for the International Forecaster, and he is a regular guest on this program almost every Wednesday night. We broadcast the interview on Thursday, in part because of the time differences. It's morning for James, and it's late night for me, so here we go. Do you remember Julia Child, James?
Vaguely, not by personal interest, but I do know the name.
A little too young to remember Jane.
I do know she was CIA.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, that's my understanding. Also, she was a big lady, and a surprising, kind of an outrageous personality in a sense. It's sort of about theatrics to her, but. Intelligent, and she had a gourmet cooking program, and she would introduce the program on a regular basis, say, today, pork roast, or today, chicken. Well, in keeping with Julia's tradition, today, China. Got some minute. I have some questions for you that deal with the subject of China, and we can start with an article from the Chinese Times, or the China Times. And it says, China to contribute to a new global trade system. That's the headline. China will join in and contribute to the construction of a new global trade system, said Premier Li Keqiang. Is that anywhere close?
Li Keqiang?
I guess so. In Beijing on Tuesday, Li also called for the United States to become more open and create more favorable conditions two countries' deeper cooperation. Li said the China-U.S. relationship is conducive, a good China-U.S. relationship is conducive to both countries and will help them to realize more global interests. The two countries should respect each other, strengthen mutual trust, deepen cooperation, and control disputes. Now, this is an interesting article for me because to begin with, it doesn't specify what the new global trade system will be. I'm assuming that Premier Li is talking about the proposed trade system that at least begins with the BRICS nation. Do you know if that's correct?
I do not know specifically because I haven't read a transcript of this actual speech itself, but it sounds to me like a general proposal, not a specific proposal about an actual trade system, but just sort of the general new world economic order or whatever it's being called.
That might be. It struck me as odd that he didn't specify what the terms, the article didn't specify. We're going to have a new global trade system, but they didn't say what it was going to be, which brings me to, the balance of my questions here. If the Chinese create a new global trade system, how will that system differ from the current global trade system, except by the choice of currency or currencies that are allowed for payment? In other words, the current global trade system is primarily based on U.S. dollars. China's new global trade system will be conducted with China's renminbi, or at least that's the implication. Other than choice of currency, how will the two global trade systems differ? Do you have any idea?
Well, I would venture to say that the difference in currency is one that has a lot of different ramifications, including in the geopolitical sphere, and just generally in terms of global relations. So that I think the Chinese would like to frame this by saying that in the Pax Americana, global one world order, the one superpower order that we've been living under since the end of World War II, obviously it's the United States primarily that sets the sort of world international relations. And as a result, you have all of these developing economies that are suppressed, I'm sure, would be the way that it would be framed, just in terms of not getting much space at the table when it comes to these big organizations like the IMF or what have you. And I think that the Chinese would like to frame it as saying, well, as we move away from that system towards one that's more balanced towards global trade, we will see a rise in sort of wealth and happiness just generally across the board. I think that's the way it would be framed. I think we'd be right to look at that with a quizzical glance, a skeptical glance, but I think that's the way it would be framed, and that there may be elements to that that are correct, and I think part of that would be the moving away from the U.S. dollar hegemon, which of course does allow the U.S. to act with relative impunity around the globe, because again, as the world reserve currency, they can just continue to print as much of it as the world will take, and the world hasn't had its fill of U.S. debt yet.
Do you think that the choice of currency is the essential factor in any global trade system? We've had the choice of currency. At one point it was gold. At one point it was the English pound. At one point the U.S. dollar. Is there a difference between China says we have a new and improved global trade system? What's the difference between that and the existing one, except they're going to focus on the renminbi more so than the dollar?
I think there is a difference in these various systems that have been used over time. And we can see that, for example, in the lead up to World War II, where the world was still working on a gold reserve backing, in which there was a lot of sort of movement of gold that was taking place to cover trade imbalances at that time. That was basically a system that was heading towards breakdown and really did start to break down in the 1930s, which set off a series of trade wars, which really was the forerunner to what we saw develop into the World War. So there are real consequences to the way that international reserves and trade imbalances and accounts are settled, and that can have a huge impact on the world generally. So then, of course, after Bretton Woods, we saw the Bretton Woods order that lasted from 45-ish to about 44, 45 to about 71, when Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard and basically ended that system. And since then, we've essentially had the petrodollar, which brings with it, of course, all the turmoil in the Middle East, which happens because of the U.S. military umbrella over Saudi Arabia and all of that. I mean, there's so many different aspects to these fundamental decisions that come from what is going to be the world reserve currency and how it's going to be administered. So I have no doubt that if we do move, for example, as seems increasingly likely to be the case, towards something like the IMF special drawing rights basket as a new world reserve currency, as we move towards that, I'm sure there will be fundamental tectonic shifts that take place in terms of international relations. And it's a question of who benefits from that, who loses from that. Is it ultimately going to be better for humanity as a whole? How do you measure that? I am exceptionally skeptical of that, because my fundamental premise continues to be that the greater amount of centralization and control over the world economy, the less that's going to benefit the average person. It might benefit the people at the top of the various economic systems of various countries enormously, but for the average person, I think they're not going to see a lot of improvement over, if any at all, in the changeover of a system like that. So I remain highly skeptical of it, but I think the proponents of this would say, well, you know, it's better to have the world resting on a number of different currencies rather than just one, and giving all of that power to Washington.
You talked about gold reserve backing. We've had it in the past. Do you think we'll ever return to it? We're talking about maybe going from the U.S. dollar, the petrodollar, to special drawing rights as the world reserve currency. There are people who hope that we will one day see gold once again as the reserve currency for the world, the official money, essentially. Do you think that'll ever happen, or is that wishful?
It will certainly not happen in the current paradigm, because the current paradigm is one that is based on fiat, and increasingly so. It's not just the fiat nature of the currency, but now it's the ephemeral nature of the currency, so that the actual coins and paper in circulation represent only a small sliver of a few percentage points of the actual monetary base, most of which is now bits and bytes. And as we move towards the elimination of cash entirely, as we're increasingly seeing at least talk in that direction, and some worrying laws, as we've talked about, for example, in France, cracking down on cash transactions and things of that nature, we're going to see a greater amount of manipulation that's going to be possible in terms of people's bank accounts. And we're going to see negative interest rates and things like that, which would not be possible in a more, even a paper-based currency, let alone a gold-based currency. And that those types of manipulations are obviously very, very lucrative for the financiers and people at the top of that system who are controlling it. Not so beneficial for you or me, but, you know, since when did we ever get caught, put in those calculations? So I think that the movement, the trend, is all in the other direction, which is away from anything resembling actual physical reality, including, of course, gold and silver. So I don't see that happening until and unless there is a fundamental paradigm shift in people's understanding of money. And again, I don't see that happening unless and until there is some sort of major cataclysmic event. And unfortunately, as we know, the powers that shouldn't be are always preparing for the major cataclysmic event with their backups that will be paraded out as the saviors of the global economy. And I'm sure some version, some form of globalization of the money supply is waiting as the backup in the event of the real, you know, this profound economic collapse.
Do you have any idea of when we might see an the special drawing rights, for example? Is there a time that you can sense where we're going to see some sort of a global reset and people are going to say, okay, this isn't working, the petrodollar is not working, we're going to have to change this, we're going to have to reestablish, perhaps peg all the currencies? Where they all, peso is equal to 8 cents. On the U.S. dollar, or 8 cents on the special drawing right dollar, or whatever.
Right.
Do you see a time when this is likely to happen? Is it 5 years away, 6 months away? When is this likely to happen?
I think when we're talking about some sort of reset in that context, we're looking more at some sort of emergency event, which obviously I can't really predict, and I think that's the point of it. But we could imagine some sort of cataclysmic change in, for example, the U.S. markets precipitated by the Fed rate hike, something along those lines that could cause a severe crisis of confidence in the dollar that would lead to, well, what are we going to do about it? Along comes the special drawing rights. We could imagine that being trotted out. I couldn't imagine a process like that happening all at once. I think it would happen piecemeal and we'd have to be introduced to the special drawing rights and get used to the idea. And I think it would be a years-long propaganda campaign. But we could imagine how an event could precipitate some sort of collapse scenario that would obviously bring that about. But barring that, I think that ultimately we are looking at a 5 to 10 year time frame. I would say somewhere in there, we're going to start seeing the eclipsing of the U.S. dollar. And again, I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to happen overnight. I think it's something that will happen gradually as the SDR or whatever alternative is brought up in the public consciousness and paraded around on the world stage. And as I say, that could be spirited along by some sort of events that could precipitate some sort of crisis. But specifically on the special drawing rights timetable, we were looking at a decision that was supposed to come before the end of this year on the special drawing rights basket, and which would be implemented on January 1st, 2016. So from that date, the special drawing rights would or would not include the Chinese yuan, which is the only currency that's being considered for possible inclusion at this point, because the special drawing rights criteria are the percentage of global trade that is settled in the currency, and then the other factor is whether or not the currency is freely usable, freely convertible. And China is the only currency currently that's not in the special drawing rights basket that meets the criteria for percentage of global trade. It's just a question of whether or not it's freely usable enough for the IMF. So that's the only thing that's under consideration. That decision was going to be made before the end of the year and ultimately made into reality in January of 2016. However, the IMF has just come out to say that they're now considering a proposal that's come from their internal team that's working on this matter to postpone that to September of 2016. And I'm trying to scry the IMF press release. It looks to me like they're saying that the decision would still be made before the end of the year, whether or not the yuan would be included.
Yeah, this year,
yes,
it wouldn't be implemented.
But it wouldn't be implemented until September. However, it's being reported by Reuters and others that they're considering delaying the decision until next year. And so I don't know if that's what they're actually saying. And they're not actually saying it outright right now. It's just kind of a press release they put out with some questions and answers that were in a very vague way. But anyway, that's the general timeline that we're looking at for possible Chinese inclusion in the SDR.
I saw a report a couple of weeks ago. And I just saw one report. And other than that, I would have expected to see 100 of these reports, but I only saw one that alleged that China wasn't really all that interested in being part of the special drawing rights. They wanted to go their own way. They weren't necessarily interested in signing up to be part of the basket. Have you heard the same report? Do you think it's credible or do you think it's nonsensical?
I'm sorry, who wasn't interested?
China.
No, China. I think that's nonsensical.
China, according to the report, China allegedly said, look, we don't want to be in that basket. And the implication is China's saying, well, we want to be in our own system with the BRICS, and we're going to start there, and we're going to start taking down your... That they didn't say this, but that would be the implication. We're going to give you a run for your money. We're going to fuck you.
Right. Well, if they have said anything to that effect, that they aren't interested in being included in the special drawing rights, I certainly haven't seen that. So I would have to see that report and where it sources back to.
Surprised, and I only saw it one time. And if it were true, I would have expected to see it a bunch of times. But it is consistent with the idea. I saw another report just lately that they decided they were going to slow down on making a decision on whether or not to bring China in or not bring China in. They're slowing down. Somebody's dragging their heels. If China's reluctant, other people are reluctant. There's a certain amount of consistency there, but again, we're just dealing with what may be nothing more than unfounded rumors. We're going to take a break for some commercials. We'll take a break and we'll get back, and whatever you got, we'll consider it at that time. I'm Alfred Addis, here with James Corbett on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm Alfred Addis, here with James Corbett on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. James, you had a thought, comment I think you were going to make before we broke for commercials?
Yes, I just wanted to add that if China is at this point saying that they're not interested or don't care about the SDR basket, that's a direct reversal from the only on-the-record official stance that I can point to, which was in 2009, the People's Bank of China governor, Zhou Xiaochuan, wrote an essay called Reform the International Monetary System, where he explicitly said, compared with separate management of reserves by individual countries, the centralized management of part of the global reserve by a trustworthy international institution with a reasonable return to encourage participation will be more effective in deterring speculation and stabilizing financial markets. And he goes on to say that the IMF, equipped with its expertise, is endowed with a natural advantage to act as the manager of its member countries' reserves. So the People's Bank of China governor is explicitly on the record saying that he thinks the IMF would do a better job handling the world reserve currency, and that they're all on board with the SDR as a potential replacement for the US dollar. So as far as I know, that's still the official position of the PBOC, but I'm interested to hear if there has been some correction otherwise.
Well, my understanding is that there's also been, over the past 12, 18, 24 months, the government of the United States has expressed a certain amount of wariness. They're saying, well, we don't think China's quite ready to be joined into the basket of SDR currencies just yet. The implication is that the government of the United States have made a big issue out of it, but they've been saying, you're not adult enough yet to be part of the basket. We don't want you in there. Well, that's a little consistent with China saying, all right, fine, you don't want us in there, we won't be in there, we'll start our own. Does that strike you as credible, or does that, again, more internet rumors?
I don't think that at this point China has the firepower to be able to really do anything, such as starting a world reserve currency in competition with the U.S. I mean, I don't think anyone thinks that the yuan is ready or capable or even conceivably possible to overtake the dollar entirely at this point. And I guess if we extend the trend lines out for a couple of decades, we could imagine that gradually happening. But at this point, I mean, the markets in China just aren't developed enough, and I don't think there's enough liquidity, and there's not enough convertibility. There's a lot of structural problems that would make the yuan just not capable of being a world reserve currency at this point.
I would agree that it's not capable of being the world reserve currency in the sense that the dollar was from the end of World War II on up until at least 2000. I'd agree that it can't be the world reserve currency, but it could be an alternative world reserve currency. And there's others in there. I mean, to some degree, the English pound is recognized as a world reserve currency. It's not the same status of the dollar, but, you know, you can keep it. There's a certain amount of convertibility there. If we had an alternative, to the extent that Chinese renminbi, the yuan, they become a viable alternative to the dollar, they're going to take some of the transactions, the commercial transactions, are going to be removed from the dollar. And as near as I'm able to understand, the dollar's only perceived value right now is largely based on its status as world petrocurrency, and that's faded, that's fractured, and world reserve currency. Insofar as either one of those is diminished further, isn't the dollar going to lose value and go into significant inflation?
Yes. I mean, I think if we look at the global trade as a pie, when it comes to at least currency settlement, the more trade that is settled in yuan, the less trade will be settled in dollars. And I think we are starting to see that. And that's why the yuan is shooting up the charts, as it were, in terms of global trade settlement, although still I believe something like on the order of 8% of global trade now being settled in yuan or something along those lines, whereas 80% or more in dollars. So still, I mean, I think there's a long way to go. But yes, I mean, again, this is a gradual process and it is happening right now. And I think, as we've talked about before, it's the death of a million paper cuts for the dollar rather than necessarily one big dramatic event. I think it's just the general erosion of U.S. Monetary hegemony.
I get the feeling that's the way China operates. They plan, who knows, 20 years in advance. And it's not their philosophy, it's not their nature to deliver one great, extraordinary strike. They just keep whittling away and whittling away until the tree, you know, chopping away at the roots, take a little cut here, a little cut there, until the tree finally topples over. And no one can exactly say, oh, look what you've done.
And although that sounds like a very sly strategy, I think the flip side to that is a potential complacency that can work its way into the system, which is exactly what we saw, I think, in the 17th, 18th century, as Europe started having its craze for Chinese porcelain and silk and tea and started importing more and more Chinese goods, and China started to accrue more and more silver bullion, and everything was great and tickety-boo, until basically the British East India Company started the opium trade in China and started getting some of that silver back out of the Middle Kingdom, as it liked to think of itself. And that bubble was burst pretty profoundly when millions and millions of opium addicts started showing up in China. And ultimately, the end result of that, of course, were the opium wars and the opening up of China by hook or by crook or by warship and expeditionary force in this case. So there is a complacency that can work its way into a system where you have that very, very long-term game plan and you think ultimately nothing dramatic is going to happen.
Well, it's also, if you are taking a long-term view, and your adversary is prepared to take a short-term view that includes sending gunships up the Yangtze, we have a very peculiar problem here. This is likely to result in violence that the long-termers were not prepared for.
Well, that's it. Yes. A long-term game plan, especially when we're talking about these economic forces, precludes the possibility of the military intervention, because military is obviously more about the short term and what can be gained and how it can be controlled, whereas the long-term plan relies on this idea that it's just going to be maybe a tension, maybe even a simmering tension, but it's still just going to be contained. But if it spills over into military direct military confrontation, I think all bets are off the table in terms of that kind of long, slow game plan.
You mentioned previously the trade wars lay the foundation for at least one, maybe both, of the World War I, World War II. What about today's currency wars? We see nations around the globe, with the exception of the United States and Great Britain, perhaps, that are competing against each other in currency wars to have their currency inflated and worth less and therefore more competitive and conducive to the sale of exports than the other nations. Is there any chance that today's currency wars can emulate the trade wars of a century ago?
There's certainly a chance, yes. It's a question of in what way I think China enters this or does not. The way they stick their toe into this is going to be very interesting, especially now, of course, that they've committed hundreds of billions of yuan to this Chinese stock market backstop. The latest estimate, they've already thrown 900 billion yuan into the stock markets over the last few weeks to backstop them, personally basically buying up the stocks through various government outlets. So it's, it's going to be interesting to see the way that they really get involved in, if not quantitative easing in the Federal Reserve sense, some form of that. And there's been talk, for example, about buying up municipal bonds by the PBOC and things of that sort of stealth QE. And it's really a question of whether they enter that fully. At this point, they're still trying to keep the yuan propped up. We've seen some incredible capital outflows in the first couple of quarters of this year, the last couple of quarters of last year, hundreds of billions of dollars per quarter now bleeding out of China. So the PBOC is trying to spend down their reserve holdings to try to keep the yuan propped up, because they're still, I think, angling to get the yuan and the SDR. So they're trying to prop the currency up. But if they go the other way with that, and if they do start diluting the currency, one can imagine that the global currency war would be on in a very serious and very profound way. And as we talked about, currency and trade wars have a tendency to spill over into real wars.
You're talking about currency outflows from China over the course of the last year or thereabouts. And here's an article from, again, the China Times. And the headlines is China's H1 industrial profits up 11.4%. And it reads, in part, Chinese industrial businesses saw their profits rise by 11.4% year-on-year in the first half of this year. The faster-than-expected growth pace was due to strong growth in June, when industrial firms raked in 588 billion yuan in profits, up surprisingly by 17.9% from a year ago. Now, there's more to the article than they talk about. There's some more percentages in here, but nevertheless, if profits are up 11% year over year, are these real numbers, or are these fabricated and made up? Because they don't seem consistent with the idea that we've had an enormous capital outflow.
No, they don't seem, well, it could, I guess, just be the question of the profits being taken offshore to try to protect them, perhaps. But at any rate, no, those are some stunning figures, and not ones that I've seen at all. The latest figure I saw was the June industrial profits, which fell 0.3% year on year. And I know that at the end of 2014, or at the beginning of 2015, we saw a record fall in Chinese industrial profits. So I don't know where these 11% numbers are coming from. I haven't seen anything of that sort. And it really defies all other forms of understanding in terms of any other numbers that we could look at that would give us an indication of underlying industrial capacity in China. Everything shows a slowing down of the industrial sector. So I'm very surprised to hear about those numbers, and I'd have to look into them more, but they don't seem to square with economic reality for me.
Yeah, you can take a look at the ChinaTimes.com, and it'll be on the front page of whatever, at least currently on the front page of that document. If the numbers were true, we're left to wonder why the stock market fell by 20%, or over 20%. It could be just a market correction for after a fantastic rise. But if the numbers are exaggerated, Do you suppose those exaggerations may be an attempt by the Chinese government to forestall further declines in the Chinese stock market? Are they singing happy days are here again, whether they are here or they're not here? Are they trying to convince people, oh, look, you don't have to take your money out of the stock market. No need to panic. Things are great. What do you think? Exaggeration for that reason? Or
That would certainly be one of the reasons why that would be being touted, especially right now. And I think, you know, we have to, that's why we have to look at all of the numbers coming out of the National Bureau of Statistics there from Beijing with a skeptical glance. And so I mean, the timing of that announcement and the fact that it doesn't seem to square with any of the other numbers we've been seeing out of China, it really does raise some red flags for me. I'd have to look more at sort of the breakdown of those numbers, but it really doesn't seem... It sounds like propaganda that's designed to reassure markets more than anything else.
We have about 2 minutes left. And you mentioned China referencing itself as the Middle Kingdom. And I've heard the term before, but I have no idea what that means. It kind of implies, okay, if they're the Middle Kingdom, what's the kingdom on the north and what's the kingdom on the south or whatever? It implies there's two other kingdoms. What does the Middle Kingdom mean? Do you know?
I know that it's the actual Chinese characters for the name of China in Chinese, and I don't know how that's said in Chinese. I know in Japanese it's called Chugoku, and the characters actually mean middle and country or kingdom. So I don't know if that represents kingdom in the sense that we would think of that, or just sort of a country, a nation, you know, in that sense, in the modern era. But anyway, as far as I know, that's the sort of appellation that China has given itself since ancient times, and that's the actual literal meaning of the characters that make up its name.
Well, we've got about 60 seconds left, James. Would you like to give people some information on how they can get to the Corbett Report and what they can find and...
Well, they can come to Western Japan, I suppose, but barring that, you can just type CorbettReport.com into your browser, and you will find my website along with all of my articles and interviews and videos and all of that good stuff up there, and again, available for free download. Please make the use of it as the resource that it is, and if you're interested in my weekly editorial for the International Forecaster, and bi-weekly, actually, you can go to TheInternationalForecaster.com. That's TheInternationalForecaster.com.
All right, James, thanks very much. Always enjoyed talking to you and always informative. We'll hope to see you again next Wednesday night for broadcast on Thursday. And thank you, folks, for listening. We'll be back. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett from the Corbett Report. Good night.